Thanks, Todd, for the invitation to give this presentation. I apologize for the early hour. We can blame Todd for that. It's kind of like booking an early flight in the future at the airport. Seems like a good idea at the time, and then when it comes, it's like, what was I thinking? I wanted to talk about prediction in cotton breeding. It's really an exciting time, and I welcome the opportunity to talk about and think about topics that I find really exciting, particularly as it's going to impact the future of breeding in general and cotton breeding in specific. Cotton breeding has always been a predictive science. All of breeding strategies are driven by technology and new knowledge. When we think about prediction, it's already being practiced to some degree when you utilize across cotton breeding. A common breeding practice is pedigree breeding. You practice selection of families and individuals within families, and what you're doing then is basing that on future performance of those individuals based on the pedigree and their performance of siblings. So that's a form of predictive breeding. Early generation selection, whether evaluation of early bulks or early generation plant selection, is based on the potential performance of future generations of those individuals and the prediction of their performance. Of course, recently, the marker-assisted selection, selection on markers, linked markers, marker-based breeding is based on prediction of genotype, phenotype, based on genotype. And of course, cotton is unique in the fact that we spend a lot of time and resources on predictive traits related to spinning properties. Many breeding programs utilize HVI, APHIS, and other fiber measurements, and in essence, what you're doing there is predicting spinning performance. But what I want to concentrate on today is genomic selection, genomic prediction, and spend a little time at the end of my talk talking about predictive analytics. This is really going and in the process of revolutionizing all of plant breeding. We have access to tremendous genomic resources, a large number of markers, sequences, genotyping by sequences, genotyping by sequencing, large amounts of data and analytical tools for analyzing that data or big data that was never available before. So I want to start with genomic selection or genomic prediction. Here's on the left, you have a schematic of genomic selection in plant breeding that was proposed by Jeanette, or that was published by Sorrells et al., where many of you know a training population is required to develop the model. It's based on the genotyping of a large number of markers and phenotypes for the important traits, both genotype and phenotype obtained on a training population. Genome-wide markers are considered to be random effects in this, and all marker effects on the phenotypes are estimated simultaneously in a single model. The assumption is that some of these markers are in LD with the QTLs affecting the traits, and the prediction model attempts to capture the total additive effect to estimate the genetic estimated breeding value of individuals based on the sum of all the marker effects. So after the predictive model is developed, it can be deployed in a breeding population, and limited phenotyping can be done on those populations, and the genetic estimation of breeding value, or GEBV, of each progeny can be estimated by summing the marker effects for each genotype. Keep in mind, we're basing this on a prediction model. Genomic selection selects the best candidates as parents for the next selection cycle based on their predicted breeding value. This is computed on genotypes and phenotypes and genotypes of the relatives. When you're using genomic selection of progeny, basically that can be used also for selection of parents to recycle in the breeding program. In my opinion, genomic selection in cotton lags dramatically behind other varietal crops, soybeans, wheat, and rice. There's some reasons for this that I'll get into in this talk. We have a short history of combining genotypic and phenotypic data that can jumpstart a training set or be a basis for genomic selection. In cotton, genetic integrity of lines and parental material is oftentimes complicates genotypic information. By this I mean many historical parents, varieties, are bulks of lines, F3 derived, that are basically populations, not homozygous homogeneous material. That complicates inference of genotype. Something I didn't put down here that came to me just as I came in this morning that I could add to this is many cotton populations, breeders, utilize complex crosses, two-way or three-way, four-way, multiple crosses in populations that may be good from a breeding viewpoint, but when it comes to genotyping the progeny of those and inferring genetic information that can be used for prediction, that becomes very complicated and oftentimes too complex to use. So really, when you move to genomic selection, we're really talking about biparental populations, not three-way, four-way, all of your favorite populations, which as a breeder may work quite well in your breeding program, but really complicate the use of genotypic information. In addition, in cotton, I've encountered in my 40-year career incomplete and ambiguous pedigree data. That also comes into play. And for good reasons, oftentimes small effective population sizes due to just the cost of phenotyping and gathering historical phenotypic population, the effective population sizes in cotton may be very small. I apologize for the print being reduced here for some reason, but Hickey published in 2014 that significant linkage disequilibrium within a training set leads to low genetic resolution and prediction results decline rapidly in actual breeding programs. As I read that work and I've met and discussed this with Hickey, cotton has undergone significant selection and bottlenecks for intense selection for fiber quality. That, along with the evolution of the crop itself and domestication, combined with the small effective population size, we need to be very careful with the significant LD that exists. So oftentimes, training populations need to be reconstructed. Large effective population sizes significantly improve prediction accuracy. Just as in breeding, genotype-environment interaction is a challenge. The challenge doesn't go away with genomic selection. I encourage everyone to look at the paper that's listed there in Trends in Plant Science, recently published by Jose Croza with CIMMYT. Does a good job of reviewing the impact of G-by-E interaction in genomic prediction. I believe application of genomic selection, genomic prediction, will really be a paradigm shift in hybrid crops, and I'll make a few more comments at the end about that. It will be impactful, as I'll mention as well, in varietal crops. The reason I say that is not so much to infer that genomic prediction accuracy is greater in a hybrid crop than in a varietal crop. I don't have time to go into that. But as I look at genomic selection in a hybrid crop, the paradigm shift that I'm referring to is that it enables you and the breeder to select for experimental hybrid performance rather than progeny test cross performance. Okay, that's a paradigm shift in breeding. Anybody that's been involved in a hybrid crop, maize, other hybrid crops, hybrid cotton in India, selection of progeny performance is based on test crosses. However, with genomic selection, you can transition to actual selection for experimental hybrid performance of the genetic GEBV of both parents and the hybrid, and not rely solely on test cross. And that's a paradigm shift. Varietal crops will benefit from genomic selection, but not in the same way. I hope that's clear. Remember, we're talking about predictive models. I love this quote by a British statistician, George Edward Pelham Box. Remember that all models are wrong. The practical question is, how wrong do they have to be to not be useful? Keep that in mind as we go through this. First of all, why genomic selection? All breeders are familiar with the genetic gain equation on the left. There's many forms of this, taking into account genetic gain, selection intensity, selection accuracy, genetic variance, and years, time. Selection based on phenotype, BLUPs, can yield very high accuracy for yield. However, in cotton, it takes a large number of reps, environments, and locations, probably more so than any row crop that I'm familiar with the cost associated with phenotyping. And also, I think the requirement for phenotyping can extend the generation interval. Genomic selection offers possibility of obtaining high accuracy of prediction of genetic values, even for individuals lacking progeny phenotypic data. There's an opportunity to scale and redesign breeding programs. If you just use genomic selection to replace phenotypic selection and don't redesign or scale your breeding program, you're not getting the full benefit of genomic prediction. Despite challenges and slow start, the next 5 years we'll see extensive progress in genomic prediction and genomic selection in cotton. Genomic selection can augment parent selection and integration into progeny selection. So really, as you're practicing progeny selection, you're also potentially selecting future parents to recycle in your program. If we think about heritabilities of important traits in cotton, genomic selection has tremendous potential for lint percent, fiber quality, and lint yield. I'll talk a little about genomic selection at gene banks and germplasm. I feel this is a great potential for genomic selection. Unfortunately, I agreed to give this talk with Todd and was doing the background work, there's essentially no publications now of any significance of genomic selection in cotton. Some are in the works. I've been made aware of significant research efforts in the public sector globally, so over the next year or two, we will start to see research results on genomic selection in cotton. I'm sure the private sector is undertaking this and will see benefit of genomic selection. But right now, I have to rely on what's happening in other varietal crops, and when I review genomic selection results for the last 5 years and other varietal crops, I have reasons for optimism. This is one example. If you look at tomatoes, it's a very costly trait to evaluate is soluble solids in tomatoes. Yamamoto in 2017 published this work comparing phenotypic values on the y-axis there with genotypic estimate of breeding value on the x-axis in four progeny populations in tomato, and saw significant prediction accuracy for this complex and costly trait to evaluate. And this allows them to scale their breeding programs for traits that are costly to phenotype. If we look at soybeans, Jarquin published in 2014, genomic selection holds good potential to enhance genetic gain in soybeans. Prediction accuracy for grain yield assessed using cross-validation was estimated to be 0.64, indicating good potential for using genomic selection for grain yield. They concluded that using genotyping by sequencing for genomic prediction in soybean holds good potential to expedite genetic gain. The results suggest that standard additive GBLUP models can be used on unfiltered imputed genomic selection or GBS data in soybeans. Let's think about this a minute in terms of genomic selection and genomic prediction. In an applied genomic prediction context, the focus, in my opinion, should not be on predicting all individuals. I'll tell you what I mean by that. We should classify individuals into categories or bins, upper, middle, lower, quartile, groups, depending on the trait under selection. Of course, that's based on individual prediction, but really, you're dealing with prediction bins or prediction classifications. And there's data to back that up, Cornella, that's shown there. Using classifiers and machine languages, machine learning in genomic selection is attractive because it is trained to maximize the probability of an individual being a member of a target class, not necessarily its overall performance. So your prediction accuracy goes up dramatically if all you're doing is placing it in a target class. High, medium, low, top 25, lower 25, and so forth, then it is prediction accuracy based on the individuals. And really, think about what we do in phenotypic breeding anyway, is that. Well, as you might expect, genomic selection can be combined with high-throughput phenotyping or phenotyping as a covariate. This is a slide adapted from Jesse Poland at KSU and Ravi Singh at CIMMYT. Phenotypes are a result of complex process of GBAE. We're very familiar with environment genetics through agronomy and breeding. And through high-throughput phenotyping, these authors refer to it as genotype by seeing, GBS. So, can you add value to genomic selection through genotype by seeing? Here's an example of the CIMMYT case. The main objective of genomic selection is to reduce phenotyping costs by using markers and accelerate genetic gains, whereas the aim of high-throughput phenotyping is to measure high-density phenotypes in a very large number of individuals or breeding lines across time and space using remote or proximal sensing. This can increase both the accuracy and intensity of selection and subsequently the selection response. Rutkowski also used high-throughput phenotyping as predictor traits in the model and saw increases in accuracy and wheat gene yields. In my opinion, as I think about this, high-throughput phenotyping in cotton has tremendous potential, and the greatest potential is in water-limited or stressed environments, where obtaining accurate phenotypic data is challenging. The last point I'd like to make about genomic selection is it can turbocharge gene banks and enable transfer of favorable alleles to breeding programs. There's three examples that I have here, sorghum, soybeans, and wheat. The first, Yuen et al. In 2016 looked at sorghum accessions and validation of genomic selection, GBS of sorghum accessions, with the target trait being biomass. Biomass yield predictions were about 0.76. Some other traits were around 0.67 to 0.83. These were based on nearly 1,000 sorghum accessions. Jarquin and et al. In soybeans used the 50K SNP chip to look at basically 18,000 domesticated soybean USDA accessions where you have historical phenotypic data and, of course, genotypic data from the SNP chip. Looking at protein, oil, and yield, they come up with prediction results of 0.92 for oil and protein and about 0.79 for yield. Simmet, in a similar manner, has looked at race stocks or wild land races, and the germplasm prediction accuracy for various traits range from 0.5 to 0.7 for these germplasm accessions. I see this as being a very productive route for pre-breeding in cotton germplasm pools and wild accessions. I'll also add that I think this will, in the future, maybe distant future, but provide a complement to genome editing as it is deployed in the future years. Genome editing is a very powerful tool. You can possibly substitute various alleles from wild germplasm that are desirable, but how do you find those alleles and how do you determine the genetic breeding value of those alleles? So I think it's a complement to genome editing. Let's move quickly to the last topic, predictive analytics. This is basically the realm of big data. In a breeding context, we're thinking of progeny data, ancestor data, environmental data, remote data. I've listed just a few things that are collected there, and all this data is used for prediction. Data analytics is moving very rapidly. It impacts you whether you know it or not. If you ever use Amazon, data is being collected. And in the future, the things you want to order, they know before you do. Predictive analytics is very common now in finance, commerce, retail, human medicine, logistics, FedEx, UPS, big data, and big data tools are being rapidly developed and deployed. This is a crude cartoon of the predictive analytic process where you define objectives, understand data, prepare data, develop the models, deploy the models, monitor performance, and analyze the results. Really should focus the most important part of this is at the bottom, developing the model. I'm not going to go through all the possible models because there's many. Some very straightforward that you may be familiar with and some newer ones that aren't even on this slide. Many of these capitalize or have the potential to capitalize on machine learning or artificial intelligence. I've shown a UPS truck there at the side. You may be familiar with the story example in logistics where the parcel gets delivered to your doorstep by UPS or FedEx. In the case of UPS, data analytics is used to get that package to you as safely and fastly, as fast and economically as possible. And data analytics has proven to them and convinced UPS that that truck should never make a left turn. Okay? So you ask any UPS driver, they may make a left turn in your neighborhood where there's no stop sign or whatever, but out on the major thoroughfares, intersections, they'll never make a left turn. That's a product of data analytics. So we have the same gaps and challenges as before when we think about predictive analytics in cotton. I won't review the ones before. I'll add a few. I'll start by saying, again, I think cotton lags, not to be critical. I think we can catch up fast, but we lag other crops for some of the reasons I listed. I'll characterize this as, when it comes to predictive analytics, we're in the beer and diaper stage. You know what I'm talking about? The early days of predictive analytics in retail, they looked at shopping carts of stores. And the greatest association they saw of items in the shopping cart was, guess what? Beer and diapers. If you went to buy diapers, you also had beer. I don't know how useful that is. Maybe you can put the beer next to the diapers, I don't know, but that was just a start, right? Now, stores are quite advanced in terms of placing products. They place, when you go into a grocery store, in a produce section, what's the first thing you see? You'll see bananas. And they've determined through data analytics, bananas are an impulse buy. You don't have bananas on your list, but boy, those bananas look good. Okay, so that's an impulse buy. So we're in the beer and diaper stage. Something that has to improve for predictive analytics to be useful, we have to have a centralized data store. All data has to be in one place. You saw on the first slide of predictive analytics the use of environmental data. Very important. And I've found we have very incomplete characterization of our test environments. So the more that you can do to gather not just data on your progeny and your trials, but on the test environment, that helps build a foundation for future predictive analytics. Of course, phenotypic data becomes important. Not just the phenotypic data of that progeny, but the phenotypic data of its parents, grandparents, and sibs. So if you have errors in phenotyping or variability that's not controlled, it impacts predictive analytics. And of course, how do we incorporate all these multiple data types together? This is not unique to cotton. This is a challenge for the Internet of Things, right? Your car, your house, everything, going to a hospital, all sorts of data is being integrated. I put the example of a babel fish. Todd, do you know what a babel fish is? A babel fish is a mythical alien creature from Hitchhiker in the Galaxy. You hold it up to your ear, and it translates any language. Okay, and now there's some apps that do that. But basically, what's the real breakthroughs in predictive analytics will be the babel fish, where just about any type of data, even images, can be incorporated into that big data set and used for prediction. So I'm waiting for the babel fish. In conclusion, genomic selection in cotton breeding lags behind other varietal crops, but will catch up fast. And I call this extreme breeding. Genomic selections will likely have a greater impact on hybrid cotton, for instance, in India. Test crossing is very cumbersome, even in maize. However, genomic selection or genomic prediction you can transition to experimental hybrid prediction and almost all possible experimental hybrids rather than just test cross performance to be your selection criteria. Genomic selection will have positive impact on genetic gain as programs are scaled and redesigned to optimization. Using high-throughput platforms with vegetative indices or other predicted traits in pedigree and genomic selection models can improve selection prediction accuracy. This may also include environmental factors as covariables. Genomic selection can unleash valuable diversity hidden in germplasm collections. Since I spent half of my career, more than half, in the public sector and some later in my career in the private sector, I always get the question, what can I be doing if I'm a breeder or a researcher in the public sector? I feel like this is a very fruitful area. A valuable role for the public sector is to determine the genetic breeding value of germplasm, something that we really haven't been able to do in the past other than trait characterization. Prediction not may not really be based on a prediction of all individuals, but rather on a classification into 3 to 4 target subgroups or classifiers. Predictive analytics has great potential to pass through to cotton growers within the next 3 to 5 years. The right variety in the right place with the right management and the right timing. Think of this as personalized farming or prescription farming. Look at all the data that will be incorporated into selection in breeding programs. That will be extremely valuable when passed on to the farmer and all the data he's collecting on his farm. So I think that will revolutionize performance of cotton in the future. So with that, Todd, I'll stop. And if there's time for questions, I'll be happy to take questions.
Roy, I appreciate you not using the picture of my grocery cart with diapers and beer. There is a correlation, I think. We have time for maybe 1 or 2 questions out there. Anyone? Dory?
I would see cotton gin being valuable if in some way, I mean, you have marker data over here, you have phenotypic data over here. Somehow, if there's a link or a way to see both at the same time on the same individual. Do you see what I'm getting at? I mean, I can look for marker data, and I can look for phenotypic data, but is it in the same place, and is it together? I mean, the real foundation for genomic selection, genomic prediction, is having the association of phenotype and genotype, and that easily to build that going forward. You may not use it directly, but you're using something as a parent, and having that data builds what you have going forward. So anything it can do to associate genotype and phenotype for the same individual that somebody would use as a parent would be helpful. Or directly. David? Or, I don't know.
Yep. Last question.
It's like what I said. I think you see accelerated use of genomic selection in soy and corn and cotton because of the reasons I stated here. Those exist in private programs, seed company programs, as well as public. So everybody's working hard to overcome that, and they will, you know. I'm pretty confident in saying there's not products on the market that came from genomic selection of any company, but it'll catch up fast.
Okay, thank you, Roy.